The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. I'm Andy Cahan, Director of Author Events. In 2015, British hairstylist Joshua Coombs hit the streets of London with a pair of scissors and an extraordinary idea that giving free haircuts to those who are experiencing homelessness could do more than simply change their outward appearances. He began posting their photos before and after their haircut and personal stories on Instagram in an effort to remove the stigmas many associate with homelessness. Through this mission's worldwide attention and success, he founded the hashtag Do Something for Nothing movement, which seeks to inspire people to donate their skills and time to those in need. Coombs' book urges us to find our shared humanity through universal themes of acceptance, love, and perseverance. This afternoon, he'll be in conversation with Britt James, founder of Philly Unknown, a project that cultivates community cohesion and educates and advocates for those who can't be a voice for themselves. Joshua, Britt, the screen is yours.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for tuning in. And I also want to say, you know, if you trickled in then on the live stream, I think as way of introduction, it's quite good to state right now that I'm in underneath a bar in East London where I'm about to have a book launch for this very reason that you're tuning into this channel. I thought I would give a little bit of context to this background and the kegs of beer behind me. Restrictions are starting to ease in London, but yeah, I'm really happy to be here today and talk to you guys. And obviously, Britt, like I'd love to start off by, you know, it's amazing to be here with you today and to chat because we've obviously worked together in the past, but to introduce you would be a great way to start and the work that you do, and then maybe like how we began to work together and how we met.
Absolutely. Thank you, Josh. Are you kidding? It's an honor. I am more stoked than I can imagine to be sitting here right now chatting with you, because it's been almost a year that we've chatted face to face, or at least Zoom to Zoom, however it may be. But I'm really excited about today, and I'm really honored because, first of all, this right here, amazing. Congratulations. This is what it's all about. And that's what you're doing right now. You said you're in the bottom, the basement of a bar in East London, and as you're celebrating a book launch a little bit.
Yeah, we're getting people along. So it's an art exhibition book launch, because that's exactly it. There's copies of that just upstairs above me. Yeah.
Because the book just was launched in the UK recently, correct?
Yeah, so it was published last week in the UK on Thursday, and then the US the week before that. So yeah, it's been literally, it's this month, everything's, yeah, the last couple of weeks especially, yeah.
Well, if, you know, you haven't picked it up yet, pick it up, because it's pretty good. It's amazing. The stories are great, so. But anyway, yeah, I'm Britt James. I'm the founder of Philly Unknown. I work with all types of community, especially people in need, those experiencing homelessness, those afflicted with substance use disorder and, you know, mental health, and just those basic, you know, day-to-day resources that people may need. So, and Josh and I, we met 4 years ago in New York City. And since then, we've formed a pretty good friendship where we've been able to share with each other, learn from each other, and also work together in the community, and not just, you know, separately, but we work together in the communities. So, you know, to be able to sit here today is great, you know, but, you know, one of our main purposes and draws together is the fact that we both are huge supporters and believers in humanity. And we both fight for the underdog as best as possible. But I think, you know, what's so intriguing about what you do is the connections you make because of what you provide to them. You know, and why I know the story, you know, how did that ever start? How did you start to just give haircuts to those experiencing homelessness?
Thank you, Britt. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a thing that I think we can all relate to, right? Walking around the cities and towns that we live in and walking by somebody who's living on the street at the time. And I think in that moment, we're confronted with a certain, I'd say like a curiosity, whether, you know, beneath the opinions, beneath kind of like your view on why somebody might end up there, or perhaps it's not even your view, it's just what you might have, you know, read. So I just think there's a curiosity underneath there. And I think that's the kind of the reason why I got started with all the work that I did. I was walking past people and doing what I knew how to do, which was buying a cup of tea and handing someone some pocket change and just doing whatever I could within the minutes that I was on the way to work or going to see friends, or usually in a rush somewhere, you know, like as in like at least in my mind, always heading somewhere, got to be somewhere. Not enough time to stop and really chat and have those conversations. But that will change for me one day, because look, I knew I was looking for a reason to sit down and find out and get a bit further into this issue that for me was so overwhelming. Because if you look at the statistics, and in London where I live, it's like you're left sometimes feeling quite helpless to a problem, to an issue, because you think, how can I do anything as one person? But I mean, I was working as a hairdresser at a time in a salon, and I was actually leaving my job, and I was on the way to cut someone else's hair outside of work to get some extra cash. But I didn't end up making it to their house because I stopped and I bought someone a drink and hung out with them for a minute. And it was a light bulb in that moment. I offered them a haircut because I had all my things with me, like the scissors, clippers. You can pretty much do like a mobile version of a haircut, but like, you know, I was taking all the stuff I needed to someone else's house. So I thought, well, I'm going to ask him whether he wants a haircut. And he said yes. And really what happened there was an hour spending time with someone, listening, being available, trying to like, I suppose there was a personal transition that happened really, which was like, I was thinking about it the wrong way, which was I was trying to think about maybe, how do you solve this thing? Like, what? How do we get past this as humans to help all these people I'm seeing? But I wasn't focused on the power of like me as an individual, at least going out and doing the things I can do, which is, okay, the haircut was great, but it was really that conversation that I realized struck me straight away, how important that might be, giving your time to someone to listen who, you know, who can feel, let's be really honest, like probably quite isolated from like society most of the time, that isolation that we can all relate to now during the pandemic, starved of those basic human interactions, like those day-to-day interactions. So yeah, you know, I handed him the mirror at the end after I, you know, gave him a shave and a haircut. And of course there was someone who like felt more confident that it was that first haircut that really just sparked what I am doing now, which is, you know, he introduced me to friends. I went out and did this on my day off. I started going out and doing this more. And the stories that I was hearing, it just dissolved every stigma as to reason why someone might end up in this position that I had before. You know, I was always empathetic towards people, but I also did buy into this idea that, you know, bad choices, mistakes, like someone must have, you know, kind of like, I feel that there was part of me that kind of might have, not consciously, but held some of those views as well. And within haircut after haircut, I was just introduced to so many more people who broke that for me.
Well, it's interesting because I think you hit the nail on the head right there. Like, you know, people buy into all these idealisms as to why people are in a position they are in. And they always blame these factors without listening to their stories. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to empathize with someone unless you really know their story and you are able to experience it with them. So it changes your viewpoint a lot. And, you know, that's something that's really difficult for people to do.
Yeah, Britt, and that's why I think it's so important, the work that you do and why we connected, to go into that a bit, because I think what is really important for me initially, whether I'm giving a talk, having a conversation like this, it's important to address what I think is like society's elephant in the room surrounding this issue, which I think is, of course, like there is a lot of people you're going to meet, you're on the street, where you're going to see a surface issue immediately that you're confronted with that's sometimes difficult. And I know people have problems with it, which is substance abuse, which is addiction, which is, you know, the byproduct a lot of the time of living on the street, or the byproduct of an issue that you might have had before. But the masking of kind of, you know, many things that you don't know about yet, but on the surface, that can be, sometimes you're seeing a behavior that, it's not a usual interaction you might have day to day. Someone who's addicted to heroin, or someone who's looking for the next score of crystal meth, you know. And I'm not saying that's going to cover everybody here, but I think it's important to address that, because I had that same issue here in London. A lot of people's first immediate reaction when I started doing the work I was doing was, "Yeah, but you know, I never really give people. I'm never sure to give people money because they're just going to go and spend it on drugs and alcohol." And of course, like there's a lot within in that sentence that, like, I think is really worth exploring. And I think through the work that you do, through your own personal experience, through us going out on the street together in Kensington, a neighborhood in Philadelphia that is almost infamous now for some of the difficulties and the way, you know, that you're trying to, like, get in the community and change that. I'd love to hear your insights as to, like, maybe what your take is on, like, how we kind of, like, help people through that barrier to be able to sort of connect to the humanity underneath.
You know, and I'm glad you brought it up. It's funny because a lot of people who, when they think about people who are experiencing homelessness or, you know, living with homelessness or, you know, close to being homeless, that it's because of another issue like substance use disorder or alcoholism or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, is scary is people have to understand that there was something that happened prior to in somebody's life, you know, a trauma, something that set this off or sparked it off. And sometimes, yeah, substance use disorder played, you know, a fact, but it may have come in later, you know, because that's what they get to. So I'm glad you brought that up. And it's interesting. You said what, you know, in your opening that people would just walk by people on the street, you know, it's, you know, that invisibility that they have or, it's hard to do what we do and to be able to convince others of how we connect and why we connect and the reason behind our missions. I mean, we all have our own reasons behind what we do, you know? And I know that's not answering your question that you asked,
but honestly, it's hard to answer. I mean, my version of it is this. I feel like I never try and point fingers or make anyone feel guilty. I just look at it as like quite a real part of this thing that I think is probably the number one reason why sometimes people are dehumanized and sometimes people are left by the wayside, because a lot of the work that I've done in the United States and in different cities, you are going to end up with that area of time. And I can imagine most people logging onto this. Thank you all, by the way. I'm very appreciative of the fact there's humans watching this in different places right now.
That's crazy.
All of you know what it's like to be in a city, and I think specifically in America, where you're going to have a tent encampment spring up. It's going to, you know, turn into like a certain area of town that people most of the time aren't walking through, just driving by. And I've been to so many cities in America where what happens then is, yes, there is those things, and yes, there are mental health issues, but the way that people are kind of put aside, like a stepchild of the city that, you know, no one wants to see.
Right.
A lot of that is because of this stigma that I think is there, that's kind of, well, they're just, it's like the idea is when you see someone using drugs, you think, well, it's reckless, they're making that choice, and, you know, they're clearly not trying to help themselves or bet themselves. But I suppose to answer that point with my version of it is just that, look, in this book, you've got a bunch of different people who were from all different walks of life, not people I specifically put in and slotted in that I thought would be a powerful message. They're just literally people I met in the run-up to making this book. And yes, some of them have had difficulties with what it is we're referring to, but others haven't. So there's that side of it. But the people who have that in me, as you said, I have seen so often people who, just the elements and being outside and the isolation and having to find a place to sleep underneath a railway bridge at night when it's cold in the winter, there's that side of it that it follows the conditions. But more often than not, what I try and do in this book is have a human conversation and try and, rather than relate to homelessness in a way of the economical side of it, which I think some people can understand, which is being a paycheck away. A lot of people, especially now in a very insecure place, like, we can relate to that side of it. But I try and talk about the pain we experience in life and the trauma that happens in life, that sometimes one event can really make you spiral psychologically. And I often say, if people wanted to put it down to one reason, which is very difficult to do as far as, you know, why someone might end up experiencing homelessness, usually it's like that lack of support network emotionally. Because if you've got one person in there thick and thin who's going to love you unconditionally and keep coming back for you no matter how low you fall, you've got a better chance of making it. And Britt, I'm sure you see day-to-day people, mate, who, like, you just know that there is that person in there who could be that story of redemption that we all love so much in life. You know, when they're in the gutter, imagine fast forward 5 years and they've got their own business. We love that story. We'll hold on to that story and watch Netflix for that on it. And like, you know, that movie is like such a perfect narrative. But I see that in people I see, but they just haven't had that emotional support at this time. And that's kind of how I see it.
And it's difficult for them because, you know, because nobody has given them that support. Nobody believes in them, or nobody's ever sat down and listened to them and heard their stories. I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing, you know, exactly what we do. They're giving back, they're giving hope. They're providing those who need it with, you know, some type of resource, you know, which is great. But, you know, what's interesting to me and what I've learned from you is that you've taken this on, and you haven't just taken this within your community and within, you know, London. You've taken this on a global scale. You have not just, you know, been focused where you, in your own neighborhood. How did that happen? How did you come about that? Because, you know, it's enough work for me here in Philadelphia when there's also 100 other organizations who are doing and trying to do what I do. Yeah. How are you able to do that? Like, what prompted you to do that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think it's actually one of this important to answer the how and the why it's important to like look at things on a global perspective as well for me personally, which is like, so I started cutting hair in London and I was still working in the salon at the time, to go a bit back on my story, which was, you know, after a few months of going out and doing this on my day off and meeting more people, I realized that this is something I wanted to follow. And I left my job knowing that I wasn't exactly sure what the next steps would be, but I needed to keep doing this. And I started to travel. Before I was a hairdresser, I was playing music and I was in a few bands when I was younger, and I knew people in different cities where I could maybe go and stay on a couch or have a spare room. Or I started just taking my backpack to new places. First of all, it was like other cities in the UK. Then I went over to Europe and sort of, you know, everywhere I'd go, I'd go out and I'd do this. And sometimes there was a language barrier, so I'd work with someone locally who would go out and translate for me. And then over in America, it was strange because I suppose I didn't plan necessarily to keep going all over the place. But then as I was doing it, I realized, yeah, this is really important, because to represent this human action, something simple like a haircut in different areas, what it does is, okay, it shows that wherever I went, wherever I was going, there's these simple ways that you can go out and kind of connect with people and listen, and that this giving your time to someone, this like putting more value, as I said earlier, reclaiming that, like that kind of feeling empowered that you can get out and do something. It acted as a way of starting to inspire other people in these cities. So every city I'd go to, I'd sort of try and pass on the baton to people who were in that community. And Instagram became this really powerful platform to share stories. I'd post these before and after photos, which are all in the book. The way I do it is I take a before photo before the haircut and then afterwards. And it's such a good signpost to make people stop and then read on to someone's story. So the more I posted on Instagram, when I went to new places, it became this chain reaction of either hairdressers getting involved, but other people using Do Something for Nothing, which was the hashtag I left at the bottom of each post in different ways, whether that be like yoga teachers going into rehabilitation centers, young people volunteering their time to go and have lunch with senior citizens who don't have any family who come and see them, neighbors helping each other with their shopping home if someone was struggling. I know these things may seem small on the outside, but what started to happen is people saw this as an opportunity to say, either I know someone who's doing something, or actually I believe I could get out there and give my time in some way. So the reason why I kept traveling is that I actually sort of followed my nose with that. People would message me in different places. I started to collaborate with like different people doing similar things, yourself included, like trying to find a community of people almost like in different cities who I'd just get to know, support each other's message, and try and cultivate what I feel like is a, anyone who gets into charity does it, I believe, for like the right reason. But I'm trying to also work out what all of us can do in our own way, where like sometimes volunteering your time for a soup kitchen is the best way you could help. But other times there might be something you've got like that you can give, and not forgetting that just turning up for someone and listening was always the main message.
And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, for as long as I've been doing this, as long as you've been doing this, you know, one thing that I've learned from you, and it's interesting because I simply forgot that, is that like, you know, your connection with those that you meet and on the street is even deeper than just that conversation, because you have that physical touch with them, you know, and it's something that, you know, is a huge, you know, barrier on the streets with people, you know, because sometimes, you know, that touch, you know, to them means something different on maybe on negative level, but you're showing them this empathetic, compassionate touch. And yeah, it's a power, man. That's a power.
Well, yeah, and I guess it's like with all this stuff I'm doing, like it's very important to recognize that what you've got here is like me as Josh doing this, and I'm spearheading this stuff to be able to put these stories out there and try and play a conduit for all these people I've met and honor the people I've met in this book. Because the truth is, really, I want to be able to those stories to flow through the work I do. But it is important to recognize the power of something as simple as a haircut, because I can remove me from the scenario as Josh and be like, that's anything and anyone and any action that's similar to that. Because, you know, we think of the stuff that makes us feel like us each week. I'd love to actually put that as a question to people, not to answer, but just to think about now, like, what is it that makes you feel like you each week? What is it that makes you feel like what's part of your identity? Like the music you like, maybe the art you like to hang on your walls, the clothes you wear, the soap you use, the car you drive. I don't know. My point is that when you're living out right in the thick of it and on the street, and you're kind of, you're looking for your next meal, you're looking for your next somewhere to sleep, you're in a, such a vulnerable place, and you've got probably a pretty much a day-to-day survival mode. You, all those things of like those layers of who you are that makes you feel connected to you, most of the time they're quite stripped away, and providing those things for someone, like whatever they may be, I just think those things outside of what help looks like from the immediate. Of course we need like the systemic change that's got to come with this. We need more affordable housing. We need to provide people with healthier food and better sanitary conditions in these areas. It's like all these fundamental things are very important, but the haircut's nice because it's like this sort of, you get to chuck it in there and it's a bit of like, we've been on the street together, man, and you know, it's like this sort of, oh, cool. It's like this surprise, like, yeah, I guess I wasn't thinking about that. Or maybe it's like, oh my God, yeah, I was like, God, I can't wait to get my, I've been thinking about get my haircut for ages. But it's like this little moment where, yes, it's not the first thing on your agenda, but that's sort of what makes it cool, because you deserve to feel good, man. You deserve to feel good because stripping someone of their dignity, what's going to happen? Are they going to start becoming more of a decent human being, or like kicking back against society, like kicking back and digging themselves and maybe others around them in a hole? It's like giving someone a little piece of their dignity back. It's like, that's not mine to give. It's about recognizing it. It's like, I don't give, the same way as like, we don't give people a voice, we amplify the voice. They have the voice. It's just being an amplifier. And I think the haircut, to touch on that, or anything therapeutic like that, I know I need that in my life, where I'm like, you give up trust to someone behind you when they're cutting your hair and you kind of got to relax. And that does happen, which is nice. Cause whether it's this big transformation sometimes, which is great when I give someone this big shave and they look completely different. But honestly, my favorite moments are when you just see someone's shoulders up a little bit higher and someone's worry lines on their forehead relax a bit, and they've got to have just gone like, oh yeah, cool, I just had that hour of like de-stress, just let it all go, you know.
And it's funny you say that, because we've been New York, Philly, Miami, and there was when we were in Miami, there was one gentleman that we met sitting on the corner the first night when we were sort of scoping out where we were going to go as we did our little surveying of the area. And I remember he was the guy that we did very last, the day that, was an 8-hour day. It was an 8-hour brutal day in the heat, yeah. And we didn't even think about that, but to see his face light up and to see that confidence and that spark in his eyes change, you know who I'm talking about? The gentleman from Michigan who was stuck, Yes. And, that's empowerment, So it's not just, making them look good. You're empowering them to feel good and to take, self-control over yourself. So this, amazing, amazing.
And Britt, that's such a, that day that Britt's describing there is a really special day. And I want to get to the reason why that message is important. Because I suppose my fear is always that people looking on might think, this is all well and good, do something for nothing, these small actions, these things. But like, how is that really going to make a difference here? But it's, for me, the most powerful thing and the reason why this book is so important, and it's to tell a new story. You know what I mean? Like, we've been told the wrong story about this thing, so much so that most of us perceive this is normal, and it's not normal to see this many people like forgotten by society. Like, no one wants to live in a city where you're seeing this many people forgotten by society. And the reason for that is because I think underneath there's a fear. I think in whether how many times you tell yourself it's not going to happen to you, there's a fear of going, if it does, that's what's waiting for me. And it's like, I just know that there's a new story to be told. And that day you're talking about in Miami, Britt, that neighborhood just neighboring Wynwood and Miami is Overtown, right? And it kind of neighbors this like hipster, new, hip kind of happening coffee like vibes. And it, immediately you walk sort of three blocks and you're in like people sleeping on every bit of sidewalk. Yeah. Like, and like, it's just, it's pretty full on. And it's the same in areas like Skid Row. You've got like the art district in LA and it just neighbors to this, this neighborhood where you can walk five blocks and the scenery completely changes. But what I'm getting to here is we met probably about 10 people that day. I gave about 8-10 haircuts, something like that. People from all walks of life who'd come from different parts of the country, or a couple of people who grew up in Miami there. And our, the vibe that was created by giving up the fear, giving up the inner dialogue of, if should I ask, hi, how are you? Should I smile? Should I not? Because is this a relevant question? Because clearly someone's in a difficult position. We just went down there, and sometimes you just got to play out your worst case scenario. And if you walk up to someone, you say, hey, how are you? How you doing? And they tell you to do one, or they say it in worst language, like, what's the worst that's going to happen, you know? And in the 5 years I've been doing this, the worst that's happened is someone's gone, go away, don't talk to me. I'm like, okay, cool, thanks a lot. Yeah. But in that scenario, the reason why that's important is you could walk through that neighborhood. You could have accidentally taken a turn from getting your $10 smoothie and come down into that bit. And you could have gone, and the energy is real. You've got lots of people suffering, but sometimes it's worse than it is on the outside than it actually is when you confront this thing. Because we started talking to people, the haircut really works because it draws people in. We got a bit of a queue, but by the end of the day, man, we'd had this sort of like little posse of good vibe people. Yeah. We were all like different people from, and they'd all sort of like, we created this little pocket of community where when you go out with the right intentions, I just believe that works. You know, that's not because of me and you and who we are. It's just about intention. You could have gone down there and served some hot dogs and put on a boombox and played some music and been like, it's like anything that you do, I think breeds this connection. And then it's a chance to then tell the story, was my point I was getting to. Because the reason why then I talk about that on Instagram and you post these little, we make these little mini videos, that's why it's important to tell people. I know sometimes there's things that happen in life where it's just between you and that person. And I'm not saying you take a selfie while you're doing that and say, look at me, I'm doing something good here. That's not going to come off. But telling these human stories of people, it removes the wall. It removes the mainstream media. Sometimes the wide angle from far away that's pretty impersonal. And here's all these people suffering. And you go, here's the human. Here's the person. Here's their name. Here's their face. Here's where they're from. And look, they're smiling and joking. And here's what they're favorite movie is, and here's what they love. And it's like, I like to find those nuances that we can all relate to, man. And that day in Miami is a good one, because it's it's hopefully a chance to, like, for people who are further away from this thing looking in, it's like, these are just people, these are just people with lives who are in a certain chapter, and we got to get real with this and go, I don't want to live in a place where if that happened to my nearest and dearest, they're not going to get looked after and helped out.
And you hit the nail on the head right there. And it's what I was going to interject and say. I think what people tend to forget is that they're the same as you and I. You know, at the end of the day, we're all the same. We're all people. We're all human. You know, regardless of what paycheck we have or what house we live or don't live in or what car we drive or don't drive. And, you know, everybody comes from somewhere. They had to start from somewhere. So to be able to get out there and to be able to make these connections, and I think that's what's so important for people to realize is that in order to do what you do and what I do is those, it's to make those connections. It's not just handing them, you know, a bottle of water or some bits and bobs and saying to them, you know, have a great day, you know, God bless you. You know, it's making that connection and making a difference. And, you know, you've done that, you know, not just within your community, you've done it in communities across the globe. And, you know, you've made, I've seen, you know, in Philly and in Miami and in New York, you know, the faces light up and the people that you connect with. And, you know, and that's a gift, man. That's a gift. And
well, thanks. Cheers, Britt. And like, that's why I'm so happy to chat to you today. And I'd like to say that, look, like, I really appreciate everyone coming on and listening to this today and like participating, because it's look, do something for nothing is just four words that mean this to me, but it's something that's a human, something we all do every day when we spend the time, when you smile at your bus driver rather than just kind of walking on by, when you say how are you to the person at your checkout. These things, like, we're in a living in a especially I can, you know, I'm in London, right? I'm living in a place where I'm like, you can go a whole day in one of the busiest cities in Europe without talking to anyone, without trying very hard, you know, because we live now in this time where we're not only distracted and we're here most of the time, but we're also kind of isolated in these little pods where we're not, you don't know the person next door to you anymore. And I'm like, Do Something for Nothing is just a little reminder of this, like, but it's something that's inherent in all of us. I am not, this is not new. This is a reminder. This is like, here's a version of it that I think is important. And in the book itself, it's, you know, a document, I think, that's just the people within it. It's about the themes and having a bit more depth to explore the kind of themes that run underneath this stuff. The things that I had to really think about and learn as I was on this process, questioning words like, you know, that I kind of thought I knew what they meant for a long time. Like, because like something like empathy, take that. It's like, I used to always think of myself as like a liberal left-leaning person who like believed in people and wanted to kind of understand, but to actually sit down and like listen to someone, I realized that I probably was. So actually there's a guy, I refer to this guy in the book called Nathan, I met in Brisbane, Australia, and he talks about this and he says, sympathy is such like a useless emotion. And he's talking about like, I don't want sympathy. I don't want people to feel sorry for me. And I think I might've felt like that before. I used to feel like, oh shit, God, poor you. You were in this position. He's like, I don't want that. I want someone to try and build a bridge of empathy. Even if like you walk one step on that journey with someone, even though you're holding your hands up and going, I don't know what it's like for you, man. I don't know what it's like for you right now, but I'm going to try. I'm going to sit down and try. And I love what he said about that, like sympathy and empathy. Like I used to probably like, for me, when I started going out and doing this, I think initially I was thinking more about the I'm helping you side of this. I'm over here, you're there, I'm coming to help you. And it's like that quite quickly was that changed for me very quickly. It's about a connection. It's about trying to form a connection that I talk about what's going on in my life too. I'm not interested in getting straight to the root of like, why exactly did you become homeless? I'm like, let's just talk, chat, have a conversation. And yes, of course, I can't deny that. Yeah, I'm going to sleep in a bed tonight. And like, fuck, that in itself is like, of course, puts me in a different scenario than you. But I feel the worry, I think, is that whilst you're stood up here and someone else is down there and you have and they don't,
right,
it creates some kind of pity and some kind of scenario that a lot of the people I talk to, they know it's rough for them right now, but they need someone to just throw them a bone and go like, okay, like I'm gonna at least try and get what it's like for you right now.
And everything you said there, so you know, once again, hits the nail on the head. I always often say to people that, like, you know, until you start to empathize, you'll never really understand. You know, there's a lot of people who give sympathy, but do they really give sympathy? You know, is it really, you know, sincere? And why are you sympathizing for them instead of, you know, trying to get to understand it? So, but, you know, there's a question that was asked here, and it's asked by Megan, and it's something that, you know, I think a lot of people is on their minds, but she wants to know, she's curious to know how COVID has impacted the communities that we serve. Mm-hmm. And how has it impacted you or, you know, since this has began COVID, you know?
Well, it's been tough. It's been tough because I tried to keep in touch with a lot of the people I'd see, like in London. You know, I take people's numbers and I do try and call people. And I think I might answer another question I saw pop up as part of this question, which is, yeah, I do keep in touch with people. And I do kind of, whenever I'm going out and cutting hair, I try my best to keep in touch with people. Obviously, it's like a very transient, the nature of being on the street, it can be very transient. You lose phones, you lose contact with people if they haven't got social media, which oftentimes maybe they don't. So right. There's some people it works and, you know, I'll know them for, you know, years beyond, and other people I'll never see again. And I've had to come to sort of terms with that and leaving that up to the universe in some ways, but I'll always try my best. And on that note, like, so people I kept in touch with London, it was really difficult for them, especially at the beginning of lockdown, because they're like regulars, as it were, the people who did come and see them and be like, hey, I'm checking in on you, or maybe, hey, I'm bringing you something. That all stopped like pretty much overnight when it was locked down in London, and people were left in this ghost town, but without anyone to help them. And then people started getting to put into temporary accommodation and housing and that kind of thing. But honestly, now I'm really getting the insights into what that stuff was like. The government over here was putting it out there saying, here's how many people we've got into hotels, is this thing, these little infographics on Instagram. And, you know, my mate Kai, I spoke to a couple of weeks ago, I cut his hair. He told me that he had to leave on the second night because he had bed bugs and he was itching all over his body. And this is like 8 people sharing a bathroom in some of them, even with COVID friendly. Not all of them. And also one thing I want to get straight is people who work at these hostels, people who do the hours and put them in, amazing, amazing people, incredible human beings, just underfunded. And the conditions that were brought about to help people with COVID, it's like I'm starting to find out they weren't all that cool. But yeah, it was difficult for me on a personal level because I had to stop doing what I was doing for a bit. Like proximity is a thing when you're cutting hair and you're really up close. But I actually, in the build up to this, I was meeting everyone who's become part of this book. And then when lockdown came in, that's when I wrote, I had the chance to actually do the writing and turn in the manuscript last year. But honestly, now I'm really keyed. I'm really aware of like getting out there and talking to people, and I'm getting back out on the street and cutting hair again and doing that stuff. And trying to find out what it was like for people, because I'm really interested in making sure we kind of highlight what happened and what didn't. Also trying to take some of these moments from the pandemic and try and instill some better values moving forward, as I said, related to the things that we can all kind of collectively empathize with, that isolation, that kind of like, yeah, those things.
And it was really hard during the pandemic when it first started, because, you know, it's difficult when you have a stay at home order and you're forced to stay at home. But what happens when you don't have a home to stay in? You know, not just that, like, I think what people fail to realize is that they don't get the news on the streets that everybody else does, unless there are outreach workers, or unless there's people like you or myself that are able to be out there spreading that news, giving it to them. And, you know, it really put, you know, our missions into a different, you know, tailspin. And, you know, it was one of those, we had to relearn how to do the things that we were so used to doing. And, you know, COVID changed all of our lives, you know, in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, Zoe says, when are you both creating the justoneperson.org? So those of us who want to be just one person to someone at risk, so inspired. Thank you so much, Zoe. That's very cool. But then she also wants to know, has a documentary been made? And if not, when is that happening, Josh?
Well, actually, that's a really good, well, thanks. So on the just one person thing, it's an interesting point because it made me think of something actually. When I get DMs from people saying, how can they get involved? The beauty of Do Something for Nothing is it's already yours, as much yours as it is mine. Essentially, it's not a charity or a not-for-profit. What I'm doing, it's just an open space for people to get involved. And, you know, what's important actually is sometimes people have asked me like, hey, can I come and help you out? And that works if they live in London. But if they don't, I'm like, it's all about where you are, this thing. Or maybe you want to be like me and you want to meet new people in new places and do it. But it's like, whatever your version of it is so important in your community. And I'd always like research the grassroots in your community, research people who are doing the things, because I'm as happy. I don't need people to be under the umbrella of this, but it's for everybody. And it's just four words that anyone can take part in just for awareness. And what was the second part of that question?
Documentary.
Oh, documentary, yeah. That's very rare. I pulled back. There was a tangent happening, and I pulled myself.
That's all right. No, back. Well, I was going to actually
the documentary is interesting because also that is there isn't a documentary or anything. Like, I've done a couple of things with bigger media. There was something that went out on National Geographic that you can watch for the story of us with Morgan Freeman, and that was a sort of piece where they came and visited me in London along with other people doing different things in the world. So you can watch that, but there's also I've learned as I go to sort of use my camera and try and record these moments. And if you look on my Instagram, which is at Joshua Coombs, then you keep on scrolling, you're going to see these video pieces of moments spent with people that act as these little mini short films here and there. I'm going to screen actually a film up here where I am this evening as part of this little mini book launch we're doing. And it's just a compilation of different people I've met. So I've kind of shot some of that stuff myself, and it's really low. It's not about high production, this stuff. What it's about is some of the words people say and share, some of the moments when you're in a position that's so vulnerable and becoming increasingly difficult. There's these truths I feel are just so important for all of us to listen to. And not to sort of sensationalize them, or I just know that there's people I meet who have become, they're the most real interactions I have in my whole life, man. And honestly, there's an element of this stuff that I think if only we were to listen a bit more, we could learn so much, because wrapped up in this word homeless, you've got all these different, it's about the human condition. It's about like people who have been through all this stuff, but now they're in this place where they have all but nothing. And they see the world from a very different perspective. They see us like buzzing around with our lives, pretending the most important thing we're doing is like, got to go here, got to go there, got to do this. And it's like, there is stuff to learn from. I used to go to places and tick off the landmarks, right? Of like, I used to go touristy, do this thing. But now I go out with my backpack and I go and talk to people who are like seeing it from the street level. And it's just a very different experience to get an insight into the place and the people that live in it. But more than anything, yeah, with the documentary, maybe I'd love to do something longer form, but my only thing is it would have to really be right. Because as you agree, Britt, it's like, you just want to portray people in the right way. And the last way I want to do is once other voices and, you know, a vision becomes committee, it can sometimes not come off how you intended it. And I'd always want it to be what this is, you know?
And a lot of people sometimes when they see that we post photos or that we post certain things, they look at it as that exploitation aspect in some minds. Right. But right. That's one thing that, you know, the two of us do is we don't do that. We actually, well, we get the permission, but we also aren't showing people, you know, at their worst, we're showing them as they are, you know, and that's important for people to remember. But we, it's really hard, you know, it's a fine line for what we do to take the pictures and to be able to put those faces out there. Because as I know, even with the documentary I did, I was insistent about if there's any faces, they needed to be blurred. Because this is somebody we're talking about. However, when we are on that connection one-on-one, it's a different level, you know? So, you know, I have somebody here and that's asking a question, like, you know, because you have traveled all over and they ask, how have you financed it? She also says that she's very overwhelmingly inspired by you, but how have you been financed? I mean, I know you've had collaborations and partnerships, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because also, like, anyone listening to this, it might think, oh, this is great. But like, you know, I mean, I did quit, you know, how do I, yeah, I've got a job, I've got bills to pay, I've got rent, I've got kids to feed. We're all trying to survive and this isn't accessible in the way of like dropping all your things and going out there and doing all this stuff. If you've got stuff that you need to do in your own life. But my thing is like, I know that, I started this like basically doing what I did, and then I left the sound. I had to keep doing this, and I found ways to keep doing it by trying to just rely on friends and immediately rely on people around me. But now I give talks. So I give talks in schools, the education part of this, I give talks in businesses and brands, and Do Something for Nothing is like everything I do. And it has been, I haven't been paid for a haircut since, well, like 2016 now, and I've just found ways of doing it. It's not because I'm sitting on a trust fund, it's just I've had good people around me. There's been times it's difficult, but I've now managed to work a wage that I was getting the salon out of giving talks, out of doing events, obviously not this one included. Like, anything that to get the message out there is great, but I've spoke at things where I've worked out to like get paid for that stuff and keep the engine sort of fueled to move forward and keep doing it. But yeah, talks is something I'm really interested in as well, because when I go in and talk in schools and, you know, 15, 16 year olds, it's really important to try and, I don't remember anyone coming into me just sort of just talk about this stuff. I had to try and work those things out for myself. And it's okay to like open a space and a non-judgmental space to ask those questions you want to ask. And if I can provide any insights, which is so nice, because we'll have a Q&A afterwards there where we have a discussion and do a bit of a workshop and just get this stuff out there, and that's kind of but talks and events and all that stuff is how I keep doing what I'm doing.
You know, Susan has a question, and I'm gonna sort of just like answer a little bit there, but she says, how have you been able to work with persons with serious mental illness who are maybe disoriented during a haircut? And I sort of just want to answer from my experience that, you know, it's once again just, you know, being able to listen and to empathize on at least my level. How about you? Because we've experienced it together, you know, whether there's been people that weren't, you know, in the right mind, but yet you still gave them a haircut, and yet we still gave them compassion bags. But you know, how did you handle that, Josh?
Yeah, it's a really important one. It's there's such, well, okay. So I've got a following thought from that question, but to answer that, it's not easy. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say it's easy at all. It's very hard. Like, it's very hard sometimes when someone is, you know, hating on themselves so much and hasn't got control of like what, you know, the moment they're in right now, because they're going through so much pain, and that can come out in all kinds of ways and all kinds of different behaviors. You've got to use your wits and have read energy. And it's not something you can sort of whip. I haven't gone for any training for that, but I just try and like use my radar of like, nah, this person doesn't look like they want to talk to me right now. And that's totally cool. And there's no point of me trying to invade their space if they look like they don't want to talk to me. And other times I've gone a little bit further and gone like, I'm not sure about this person. We're going to say hello anyway. And that hasn't gone too well. Okay, see you later. Or they turned out they've actually gone, oh, hey, yeah, how are you? Like, and you spark a conversation. But honestly, I've spent time with people who've been in really difficult positions, and sometimes it's not all that easy. But, you know, those people still, like, you got, imagine someone in that situation already being in those difficulties and, like, again, just not having any human interaction, not having anyone come and say hi and see how you're doing. You know, it's, I know some of this stuff is difficult. That's why this, you know, it's charity and giving back, or whatever you want to call it, everyone, the semantics are different. I'm giving back for me sometimes. It's like, it's whatever your version is, it's like, you just, it's not this soundtrack playing and it's all beautiful and lovely. It's a challenge. But guess what? That challenge is like incredibly rewarding, because you don't walk home going, pat myself on the back, I'm a good person. You have a shared experience with a human that if you end up, you're like, you're very aware that it was probably better that you had this interaction than if you didn't. And it's good for you as well, because it's a symbiotic thing. Like, it's not just for that person, is it? Do something for nothing in itself is a bit of a not true. It's not true, because it's not for nothing. It's you, there's plenty that you get back for this, for these kinds of interactions. But what I was going to say is, I remembered a Uber driver. I was in Philadelphia with you, and it's when I was having a difficult time and I had my injured foot. And
not just that, it took you 5 hours to get into
immigration. Yeah. I had a very difficult entry to coming in, and then I had this foot injury, so I had to stay with you for a while. And I remember coming back in an Uber from a clinic I went to, and I remember talking to this girl who was driving this Uber, and we were having a conversation. It was one I really needed as well. And she was telling me about what she did during the day, and she was like a mental health care worker. And she told me she loved her job, absolutely loved her job, but she's going to have to leave it soon. And I asked why, and she said, because it just doesn't pay me enough. I can't afford to do this. I said, what are you going to do? She said, I'm going to have to do Uber full time. I just think to myself, I was like, you got this bright, beautiful, amazing human being telling me how she loves her job, which consists of caring for and holding space for some people in very difficult mental situations. Mm-hmm. And she's having to leave, and she's about to pack it up. So that in a nutshell shows us, to follow on from that point, that we all know what it's like now to be aware of our own mental health, and when you're not aware of it, how that can spiral. This conversation of mental health is becoming much more popular among all of us in society. So I think, I really hope and pray we're starting to understand it, that on this level we're talking about, we have to provide better support. It's so underfunded. And there's therapeutic care, just to finish this point, because I know you've got, and I really want to hear your insight on this, Britt. It's like, just because someone's in a really difficult position, like, you can still therapeutically get somebody to such a better place. It's like, there's a spectrum for mental illness. Even if you're diagnosed as someone who is schizophrenic and you know you've got this problem and it's with you, but there's a magnificent scale of how much better you can feel and how much better you can feel looked after on that scale. So like, we got to get better and understand this thing, and we got to try and interact with it. And it is difficult sometimes, but I'd love to hear your insights, because where you are in Kensington, you experience this like day to day.
Well, you know, I think it's, we have to get rid of the stigmas is what we have to do. And it's what we're doing with what we do with our work. But, you know, it's something that, you know, we're underfunded. People are underfunded and overworked. And, you know, that takes a toll on their mental health then. So like you said, if your mental health isn't 100%, how can you work with somebody who is? And, you know, it's a catch 22, and it's a vicious cycle. And it's a systematic problem that we're going to be facing on a daily basis until, you know, either the wages are raised in that field, which, you know, I know most people, let's face it, most people don't go into that field for those wages, you know, they go into it because they want to help. And it's difficult. But, you know, my thoughts on it is just fact that, like, you know, you have to look at that on a global scale, because it's not just that immediate community problem. It's worldwide. We don't talk about it. You know, we're coming out of Mental Health Awareness Month, you know, and we're, you know, it's, you know, be aware. We all have to suffer for it. You know, we all have to, you know, look at the suffering that people are doing, and we have to understand it. you know, once again, empathy.
Yeah. And honestly, and on that point, I'd love to put a positive, which is, I know some of this stuff may be like, we're back to overwhelmed, helpless. There's all these problems. And it's like, to advocate for this stuff is to advocate for these people we're talking about. It's to do it for yourself. I look at all these things about doing for myself too. When I go out there and I'm spending time with someone, I'm also going like, what, to allow for someone else's bad day is to allow for my own, you know? Like mm-hmm. if someone's having a bad day, and we all know what it's like to get triggered by that, but right. It's not easy. And it's something you have to, it's a daily practice, but I always just keep coming back to this thing as the reason I'm optimistic and the reason I stay hopeful about all of this stuff is like, I just concentrate on things I can control. And that's like who I walk out into the world today as, you know? And no one's taken that from me. That's a little bit of hope I'd like, is one thing I'm very sure of is like, there's one bit that it's not getting access in my database, which is like, it's not ever going to get hacked, which is like, I can still do the things I can do today. Doesn't matter what the fuck is going on the world around me, because I'm still going to get up and go like, all right, what can I do? Even if it is smile at that person and try and, it's just something so small. Hold the door open for someone. Just try and when you can, when you're confronted with these moments, just work those into your life. And I think that is positive, because that stuff ripples. And I've seen it. And there was a question actually about anyone I keep in touch with and whether people have called me. And I'd like to actually talk about someone who that happened with recently, which is a real story of hope, which is my friend Kenny, who I used to cut hair for in London, Victoria, this big area of London where there's a train station, a coach station, super busy. Kenny was sat outside many times. I walked past him and I stopped to speak with him, and he really was in this position where hundreds of feet walking into the train station, rush hour, and he was just this guy sat outside asking for some change, and he was experiencing homelessness at the time. And I went back, I cut his hair once and we hung out, and I went back to see him again. And I often go past this area, and then one day I didn't see him anymore. And that was it. And I was like, you know, oh God, I don't know what's happened to him. I tried his number, it didn't work anymore. But about last year, towards the end of last year, I got a message on Instagram, and it was him from his girlfriend's account, his now girlfriend, saying, Josh, I don't know whether you remember me. And he sent a photo of himself and he said, it's Kenny, you used to see me outside of London Victoria Station. I just wanted to let you know that I'm back in Burnley, where I'm from, which is in the north of England. I mended the relationships with my family, and I got a job again, and I got my car and this thing, and we got on the phone, and now we're mates and we're talking all the time. We're talking, we're here for each other. And now Kenny's he's like, I cannot wait to come back, because I want to go out on the streets together, because I think I can really help people and share the fact that I was there when I was living there. And honestly, the stuff he says to me, he's like, I used to think about homelessness in this whole different way. And I would just, he said, I always stop everyone. I said, now it's like his thing where he can't not. And he's like, he's this person who, you know, that's not about me. That's not about Josh. He just says to me, he's like, just the fact that someone bothered to care about me and talk these things through and gave me a different perspective. It gave me objectivity in a situation where I had none. That is one of the most beautiful gifts that is part of this. Because I saw another question. I don't know if I'm going to be able to name three truths, Rob, because I think we're running out of time. But one truth to take away from this is the objectivity that you can provide for someone else by turning up and showing up for them. It can be incredibly crucial. And if it comes at a difficult moment, like if someone's like horizon of where hope is, it's so far away and they can't see it, you know, you might just give them a glimpse of it like there that was like too far to kind of like to actually visualize. And like, there's something to be said for that. In my own life, when I have my own problems and it's been difficult for me, I can go, this thing, whew, it can just, I can talk and talk and talk and talk. And as soon as I let it out to someone, they give me a little bit of objectivity and go, whoa, hold up, I saw that differently. How about, maybe you're thinking about this, and I mean, you just get to see another perspective, and that is the truth. But I think it's, you can never place like, that's so valuable to people when they really need it.
And that is the truth. That is so true, as you said that. And it's, you know, got to get out of your own head sometimes with it. You know, there's a lot of other questions in here about, you know, people, you know, offering to, you know, different organizations. And I think it's, you know, we're not going to be able to answer them all. But, you know, if you are interested in contacting Josh, of course, you can always follow him on Instagram at Joshua Combs. It's two O's, COOMBES. And on there is his email as well. And you can, you know, send him some of the information you're saying here and the questions. You know, his organization, Do Something for Nothing. I mean, those four simple words. And it's not even an organization. I don't even know why I say it like that. It's a movement, right? It's a movement. It really is.
And it's for sure, Britt. And like, honestly, mate, thank you. It's been really good to talk to you again, because one thing I'd say is, like, what keeps me going is, you know, being able to link up like we do and share experiences and do that in real life. And I'm hoping again in the future, like, actually together face to face when this chapter's behind us. But I just say to anybody, you know, whether it's on this call right now or maybe we've cut this into some social media clips to play afterwards, but it's like, I get it. I get what it's like to be scrolling your phone and reading all these articles and being received so much information and the negativity and all the things that happen around you. But there's going to be someone in your community who's trying to get up and do something differently. And it might take a bit of research to sort of find out who they are and like get to know them. Or maybe it's just you, just there's a way to shake off that fatigue of feeling overwhelmed by stuff. And you just got to find that little like spark. And for me, it happened. And it doesn't mean I'm always okay and I'm always fine, but there's a source I know now that I can go back to reignite that and go like, yep, it can be really difficult life sometimes, but like, yeah, it feels important to participate in your community beyond just your friend and family circle sometimes, you know.
And, you know, and that's important for people to know that, you know, you don't have to be a part of a large organization or group something for nothing. You can take a water out with you on a hot day. You can take an extra pair of gloves out on a cold day. You can just give somebody a smile or say hello as you walk by, because that means more to them that you recognize than anything. So I think that's really important, you know, and I think if a takeaway from anything with this conversation today is that, you know, sometimes you could just have a little bit of a push to make you do some really great and wonderful things.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And honestly, that is, I think, a really perfect place to like say thanks so much, because honestly, that's the message, Britt, right there, man. It is. And then thank you, because everyone calling today, obviously another amazing way to support this is everyone, you know, watching this is like buying the book is super helpful for a bunch of reasons, because there's Akashic, thank you, huge thanks to Akashic for believing in this from the start, for absolutely creating something that I'm incredibly proud of, to honor the people within this book. But you know, they're donating $1 per sale for each copy bought, but 100% of my proceeds are going towards future not-for-profit art projects to amplify the voices of people we're talking about, which is something I've done a lot in the past. So this is a way to help the cause, but it's also a way, more than anything, I would say the most important thing is the stories. You buy this, you share it with your friends. You know, you might. It's about trying to tell that new story that I've spoken about. So thank you so much for everyone for supporting this.
Absolutely. And Andy, you know, with Free Library, thank you so much for, you know, hosting this event and getting this together, you know, and, you know, thank you so much for allowing me to have this opportunity to speak with, you know, Josh, because, you know, it's been a while, like I said, and, you know, we are on very similar missions, and being friends has been, you know, helpful to each other. So, once again, you know, I'm Britt James. I'm with the Philly Unknown Project. We operate right here out of Philadelphia, but we don't stop here. We go above and beyond as well. You could always find us out there. But in the meantime, if you have not done it yet, make sure you pick up a copy of Josh's book. You know, you can order it. There are some bookshops out there that have it. Do a little research. Get his book on Do Something for Nothing. Find out about the people he's encountered. There are some amazing stories out there. You're going to find out that these people are just like you and me, if not sometimes a little bit better.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah. Thank you, Britt. Appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend.
Cheers. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/author-events.